And I realized I forgot to introduce myself, so I'm going to introduce myself. I'm Tamika Drew with Liberty Tree. I'm going to be moderating this evening, and my co-moderator is the fantastic David Cobb. I'm going to welcome him up to the mic right now.
All right, thank you so much. So my name is David Cobb. I have the distinct pleasure of introducing our next speaker. Jennifer Epps Addison serves as the president and co-executive director of the Center for Popular Democracy. She leads several of their racial justice campaigns and works closely with their community-based local affiliates. Jennifer is dedicated to growing Black-led organizations, strengthening investments in communities of color, and deepening organizing strategies that build power, and here's the thing in her bio that got my attention, that builds power with working class white folks like I come from by addressing racism head on and building authentic relationships on shared interests and values. Help me welcome Jennifer Addison.
Y'all, I've happily seen some of my time with Keith Ellison. He was incredibly eloquent. And it's an honor, really, to be up here with these folks. So I'm Jennifer. I am the president of this incredible national community organizing network called the Center for Popular Democracy. We have 48 affiliates in 33 states and Puerto Rico, including three right here in Minnesota, Take Action Minnesota, SITUL, and Neighborhoods Organizing for Change right here on Minneapolis's north side. It is an honor to be here. I want to give homage to the moment that we're in. I can't be in Minnesota and not speak Philando's name. I can't be here talking about the change of democracy and not talk about the fact that our democracy is so incredibly broken when we can murder folks on TV and get away with it. You know, I'm not a politician. The last time I ever ran for office, I think I was maybe 15. I ran for student council vice president and I lost. And so I think what's great about that is I can just be real with you. So I'm gonna get real with y'all right now. And I don't think I'm gonna say anything y'all don't know, but I've spent the last two decades of my life building power and organizing in communities as a community organizer. 2 weeks ago, I was with 200 of our members from across the country as they were getting arrested in the halls of Congress and in the offices of senators. There at 1 a.m. as the vote was announced, and we found out that we had defeated Trump Care for the fourth time. I spent the last 5 years with the bravest folks I have met, poor and working class, black and brown folks, largely young folks, in the fight for 15, who have transformed the way we talk about, think about, and believe what is possible in our economy. I am so deeply hopeful about the power of organizing as it relates to reclaiming our democracy. And so I'm just gonna share with you seven lessons that I've learned in my time, this last two decades as a community organizer. And I hope that you'll take them in the spirit in which they're given, a spirit that is deeply passionate about love, a spirit that is built off the back of my grandmother, Mary Lee Epps, who was born in Arkansas, who grew up picking cotton at the age of 4 in Oklahoma, who at 17, as just a young girl herself, came to Milwaukee for a better life, who taught me that while this country doesn't live up to its promises, it does not mean that we don't demand them every single day. And so I'm going to give this in the spirit of her, and I'm going to say, starting really quickly, that this room is just far too white. It's far too white, and it's far too seasoned. We have some well-seasoned folks, and I thank you for your leadership, and I thank you for your, what I guess, are decades of activism, but we are missing young folks. North Minneapolis is not here right now, and that is a problem for our democracy. So I spent a lot of time, I grew up in Wisconsin. I cut my teeth in union political labor organizing. I spent most of my time in Wisconsin being the only woman, the only person of color, and the youngest person in all the decision-making rooms. And by the way, we were making decisions for a lot of black folks on the north side of Milwaukee, right? So I know a little bit about this. And one thing that I feel that I know for certain that I have learned is that the number one way that we can build an inclusive democracy. The number one way that we can reclaim our community power in this country is to trust Black women. Let me break this down. 94% of Black women voted against hate, voted against xenophobia, voted against homophobia. 94% of Black women stood up and held our noses. We said, girl, I guess I'm with her. And we went and did what we had to do. And I will tell you something, as a Black woman, I am tired. I am tired of trying to save America. All right? I'm tired of it. Without the respect, the authority for making decisions, the ownership over the strategy that our folks deserve. So if we want to build an inclusive democracy, then we need to start by trusting Black women. And let me tell you, when the incredible Representative Maxine Waters said she was reclaiming her time, she wasn't just talking to the person in the hearing who was disrespecting her or refusing to answer her question. She was speaking on behalf of Black women everywhere who are reclaiming the time we have put into these social movements without getting anything back in return. And so I'm here to reclaim some of that time today. Across this country, women are in formation. Right? There are incredible, incredible Black women who are stepping forward, stepping out, stepping up to lead, and we need to get information behind them. If you have not donated to Stacey Abrams, if you have not checked yourself because we let folks like Tashara Jones in St. Louis go down in flames, lose by 800 votes because we didn't stand up for Black women, then it's time that we get real serious about getting information behind the leadership of the incredible Black women in this country. And so while we're at it, let's talk about why. Because Black women, when you listen to their vision is about an inclusive democracy. Right. And I don't just mean cisgender Black women. Let me tell That's you right. that Black trans women have been That's holding right. it down since Marsha P. Jones in New York started Stonewall. Y'all, we got a problem because the leadership, the news media, particularly in the Democratic Party, and I don't want to make this about parties, but I'm going to say this, that if we believe and fall for this line that it is about the white working class who will save these next elections, we are going to be in the exact same position. That's it is right. that thinking that got Trump elected. Right. So let me be very clear. It is not about the working class. It is about race, right. full stop, period. Representative Ellison did an incredible job talking about the history of coded language, the history of dog whistle politics. Well, let me tell you something. We think on the left, and you consider yourself leftist, progressive, liberal, Democrat. I'm just going to say it to all of us, right? Someone who occupies left of center. We think that if we minimize race, if we ignore race, if we hide race, that somehow racism will go away. It doesn't. And you know what? While we're busy not speaking to it, the Republican Party, they are busy talking about race every day in salient ways that are connecting with folks who are struggling. So if we want to build an inclusive democracy, we need to confront race head on. And while we're at it, let's talk a little bit about identity politics, because I've been hearing that word. It's been all over my social media feed, especially after the governor of West Virginia decided to go Republican. There's a lot of folks talking about identity politics. I'm not exactly sure what that is. I'm guessing that it means something that if you have an identity other than cis white male, that it's your politics? I'm a little confused. My politics are my politics, and I come to them wholeheartedly as who I am, a queer Black woman from the north side of Milwaukee. That's not about some special category. That is about demanding the full freedom, as Dr. Martin Luther King deserves, that I should have been given by birth. And so we need to understand, right? We need to understand how these divisions are created. Why do I say we need to talk about race? Why is that important? Dr. King talked about something else. He talked about this false doctrine of white supremacy, right? That continues to divide folks who should be natural allies. I come from Wisconsin. In my state, we lost by 22,000 votes. We probably should have been more. to be quite honest with you, because we disrespected the voters in the state. Keith Ellison talked about the campaign vote. Well, I'll tell you, in Wisconsin, Bernie Sanders won 71 out of 72 counties in the primary, and Hillary Clinton didn't come back to our state not one time to talk to folks after that primary. Largely because folks believed that they could take for granted the votes of black folks in Milwaukee. And you know what? I am proud that there were conscientious objectors, that there were people who voted the way that they voted, that there were people, we had 130,000 people vote third party. And while somebody may say that that lost the election or that that elected Trump, I will tell you it was the cowardice and the unwillingness to reclaim and to fully own what should be a promise to every person in this country that lost this election. It was not somebody who decided to vote third party. I want to talk about race because, as Keith said, our economy, the entire view of capitalism is centered on race. It is not intersected, it is not, they're not parallel tracks. It is about race. So for me, when we talk about struggling white communities, we have to be really clear that those feelings, those experiences are real. Those experiences that folks are feeling in West Virginia, the fear and the anxiety, that is a real thing. That is not fake. And so for us to build power, we have to be able to say very clearly that you should not have to get black lung disease just to feed your family. And as a black woman from Milwaukee who literally every day sees people doing anything and everything they can to survive, I can say you shouldn't have to go to jail to work at Starbucks or Victoria's Secret or Whole Foods. You shouldn't have to go to jail to find a job in a prison labor camp. And my brothers, my white brothers and sisters, you shouldn't have to die or get sick to feed your family. I can say it authentically and fully and own it. I don't know that everybody in the Democratic Party can say the same.
That's right.
And while we're at it talking about identity politics, I want to say that it was just here in North Minneapolis when Bernie Sanders stood in front of a room full of black folks and said that he didn't believe in reparations.
Yep.
And so, for the folks who want to tell me who my savior is, let me be very clear. I might align more with one person or another, but if you're not talking liberation, if you're not talking freedom, you are not a savior to me.
Girl.
You are not going to make me feel guilty about how I choose to vote. And let's talk about that for a second, because the denial of reparations for black communities is about anti-black racism.
That's right.
Explain to me why we can talk about reparations, why we have given reparations to Native populations, to Jewish populations, to the folks who were interned in our country, and yet the second we talk about reparations for black folks, our white brothers and sisters go silent,
that's right,
go scared, think it's a distraction, a division. We cannot reclaim and build an inclusive democracy if we can't say something as simple that the millions and millions of black folks who built this country on their backs deserve some reparations for the oppression that they face and continue to face. And so when we think about democracy and we mostly talk about voting, and I get it because, you know, you built the ballot box, it's all important. We all fought for it, so I get it. But let me, you know, sort of try to parse this out a little bit. For me, democracy is not going to cast your ballot. It's not voting. It's everything that happens in your communities every day in between election day. And our communities are rising up. Our communities right now are the best example of inclusive democracy that we can ever hope for. When I talked about being in the Capitol building, in the halls and in the offices of these senators with these hundreds of people, these brave people who were engaging in civil disobedience, I should say to you that it was largely led by people living with HIV. It was largely led by people with disabilities. It was largely led by black and brown queer folks who were standing up and have been standing up way back in the day since the ACT UP days, right, for the freedoms that we all hope to enjoy one day. And so for them, that act of civil disobedience was more about demonstrating their commitment and their passion for our democracy than pulling a lever or pressing, I guess you press a button now when you go vote, if you have those electronic machines, than pressing a button ever was. The fourth point that I've learned is that democracy must be claimed. It will never be given to us. And it has to be claimed from the ground up, not the top down. We talk a lot about Trumpism, right? And I get it, because you know, I see the folks, the families who are separated, our undocumented brothers and sisters who are living in terror. I understand why we're focusing on this administration. But let me be clear that many, many, many of the problems and the challenges that we are facing, those solutions are not found in Washington, they're found in the local level. The Center for Popular Democracy, Law for Black Lives, and BYP 100, we just released a report called Freedom to Thrive. We analyzed the city and county budgets of 12 jurisdictions, including here in Minneapolis. And what we found in that report is that on average across those 12 jurisdictions in every kind of community from the north, the south, the Midwest, the east, and the west, that on average our cities are spending about a third of their general purpose revenue just on policing. And let me be clear, we're not talking about the whole system of mass incarceration being a third. We are literally just talking about policing, a very conservative estimate. We're not talking about the district attorney, probation, parole, or suppression, just policing. Now explain to me how we can build thriving communities, how people can engage fully and wholly in democracy if we're spending a third of all of our money on criminalizing, caging, and locking people up. And what's interesting about that report is Trump wasn't making those decisions.
That's right.
The Republicans in the state legislature, they weren't making those budget decisions. Yeah. It's Democrats and so-called liberal, so-called progressives who are making those budget decisions in our communities every day. Yeah. And so when I say that democracy has to be built from the ground up, it means that we need different people who are running for office, who are claiming power, who are contesting for power on the local level, who will make the decisions and place the priorities of communities over the priorities of developers and police unions. I've Keith talked a lot about the fake news media, you know, sort of the electoral class, the different structures, because I think, you know, the fifth thing that I really learned is that their structures, whether it's mainstream media, whether it is the consultant class, whether it's the pollsters, their structures are never gonna bring us liberation. If we want real freedom for this country, we have to create and reimagine and transform systems for freedom, not for a little bit more, right? Not to be a little bit less poor. We need to stop talking about minimum wages, and we need to start talking about living wages.
That's right.
We need to stop talking about things like implicit bias and how the police deal with mental health care, and we need to start talking about everybody having the dignity to exist in their communities, whether they have houses or not, whether they have a job to go to or not. We need to start talking about transforming systems. And we can't do that if we can't reimagine this country. If we can only believe that this country is as good as the people in power have let it become. One of the key lessons I learned from those brave workers on the Fight for 15, who through their strikes, through their brave actions, and let me just remind folks that 5 years ago, the Fight for 15, it seems very like, oh yeah, of course not. 5 years ago when we started, we were laughed out of the room by Democrats and Republicans. We were told by friends and family we were insane, and how dare you even ask for more. Those folks had to go deep, deep within themselves. They had to come out of the shadows of poverty, and they had to believe that they were more valuable than others were telling them. And because of them, millions, tens of millions of people around this country saw increases in their wages in this last year. So that belief is important, it is critical, and we must install it in all of us. My time is almost up, so I'm gonna give you my last couple of points really quickly. First and foremost, this is my sixth point. Please stop letting mediocre white people fail up in our political system.
That's right.
I'm just gonna say it. Kick out the pollsters. Kick out the communications consultants. They do not spend time in black and brown communities, and they sure as hell don't spend any time in struggling white communities. So they are so disconnected from what is happening on the ground. You know, the key economic message of the Democratic Party was we all do better when we all do better. What? No, we don't. And you got people in rural Wisconsin, in rural Minnesota, rural places all over this country. You got people in urban cities all over this country going, where the hell you been? We need to stop that. We don't all do better when we quote unquote all do better. In fact, some of us do worse when y'all do better. So we need to get real about what we're talking about, and we need to offer real solutions for the problems and challenges and the real struggles communities are having. And I believe if we trust Black women, if we trust communities of color, if we give them the tools and the freedom to go out to struggling white communities and have this conversation face to face, I believe we can build an inclusive democracy. I believe that we can drown out the politics of hate, but only if we're brave enough to have those critical conversations. Last two points here and then I'm done. Democracy is not liberation. But liberation is not possible without democracy.
That's right.
An inclusive and bold and imaginative democracy is worth fighting for. It is what my grandmother struggled her entire life for. It is what she gave her life to this country for. It is why she got up every day and worked that no-paying job and died poor despite never taking a day off of work, because she believed that her contributions to this country could be more. It could be better for her son and therefore better for her grandchildren. That belief, that hope, that inspiration is worth fighting for. It is worth contesting powerful for. And this is my last point. What can save our democracy has always been and will only ever be the power of collective organizing. And I'm gonna end there. Thank you so much, everyone.